Okay, this is David Wolford. It's June 21st, 2006. I'm here with Mr. Lewis Stout in Lexington, Kentucky. How are you doing today, Mr. Stout?
Doing fine for an old guy.
Yeah? I'm here today to interview Mr. Stout for a few reasons. His participation in sports and experience through integration in Cynthiana in the 50s. And then as a coach and teacher at Dunbar High School, and then later on as a assistant commissioner and eventually commissioner of the Kentucky High School Athletic Association. So we'll gear most of our discussion around that. Why don't you just start by just giving us some background, your childhood growing up in Cynthiana and through your college days.
Well, I was born in Cynthiana, Kentucky, which is Harrison County, and on May 17, 1939, I grew up down there as a youngster and enrolled in school at normal age and went through the first 9 years of school at Banneker High School, which was named after Benjamin Banneker, an all-African-American school at the time. And this was during the era of segregation. And we enrolled there, and I grew up for 9 years thinking that I would graduate from Banneker High School, but that didn't happen because in 1954, as you well know, Brown versus the Board of Education, a regulation came through from the federal government that segregation would end, and consequently in my ninth grade year was my last year at Banneker High School. And I enrolled in my sophomore year at Cynthiana High School and went on to graduate there in 1959. I went from there to Regis College, where I went out there and played ball for Joe B. Hall on a basketball scholarship and graduated in 4 years, 1963. And after that, I started working in Colorado at Lookout Mountain School for Boys, which was a detention center for juvenile delinquent youngsters. And that had been my, I guess I started working, thinking that that's where I would spend the rest of my life, working in juvenile delinquency, but fate changed things, and for good or bad, I don't say it was for bad, but or good for that matter for Colorado, because the people that hired me at Lookout Mountain School for Boys had anticipated I would be there quite a while. But I left there after 1 year and came back here to Lexington in 1965 and took over the teaching and coaching job at Dunbar High School, replacing a gentleman that whose name is legendary, S.T. Roach, who was a longtime basketball coach at Dunbar High School. So I started coaching there after he retired from coaching in 1965, and I stayed there, remained at Dunbar High School for 2 years, and then after that, in 1967, the schools began a city and county merger, and consequently, Dunbar was closed. And I went to Tate's Creek High School, where I was the assistant basketball coach for 2 years and became the head basketball coach there after Dick Jones retired. And I stayed there for 4.5 years, close to 5 years. And we went through, the Kentucky High School Athletic Association was going through some major legal changes relative to African Americans representing, being on the representative staff and also on their board. And of course, there was a federal lawsuit that was filed, and under the federal lawsuit, stipulations came about that the KHSAA would no longer be an all-white entity. And so they approached me about becoming an assistant commissioner in 1971. On December the 10th, I left Tate's Creek High School after almost 5 years of teaching and coaching there. I left there and went with the KHSAA as one of the assistant commissioners. I remained assistant commissioner for 23 years under Ted Sanford, who was the first commissioner of the organization, and then I worked a little bit for Joe Bill Mansfield before he passed away for probably less than a year when he had to retire. And then I worked as an assistant commissioner under Lee T. Mills for 16 years. And when he retired, I worked for Billy Wise as his executive assistant for 2 years. And in 1994, I became the first African American in the United States to head a statewide athletic association as the commissioner. And I remained there for 8 years. And as commissioner for the KHSAA and retired in 2002.
Okay. Let's go back. That's a good summary there. Let's go back to the pre-Brown days or the pre-integrated days in Cynthiana. I read in a 1954 report that Banneker, and you mentioned it was named after Benjamin Banneker. Do you know anything about, can you tell me who that is? Or?
Well, he was one of an African-American who was strongly into national politics and was probably strong in breaking up segregation throughout the country. He was a gentleman that was a strong name in African-American growth throughout the South. And consequently, and he was an inventor, invented a lot of things, and the name Banneker grew out of his name.
Is he from Central Kentucky at all?
No, national
name.
He's from outside of Kentucky.
Okay. He wasn't involved in getting that school started necessarily,
just named in his honor.
The
name just came after him.
Okay. But I had read in a 1954 report, if this is right, that Banneker had about four teachers at the high school there.
If we had four, we were very, very lucky. Now, in my ninth grade year, we had, let's see, one, two, three, four, five, we had six teachers.
Okay.
In my ninth grade year, but before that, probably four teachers, yeah.
What's the, do you recall any of these educators and what made them unique?
Oh, yeah. I had Miss Mayfields was my English teacher, an outstanding teacher, very strong-willed lady. She didn't stand any more than 4 foot or 5 feet tall, but she was very, very dynamic in her stature and also very strong educator. And then Miss J.T. Gaddy, who everybody in Cynthiana from my parents on remember her. She was very, very strong, we were about 6'2", almost 6'3", in stature and great big woman, but she had a disciplinary pattern about her. We took elementary courses from her, and she was very, very strong in teaching us how to present ourselves and to learn. She taught us math, and we taught from her, and we had history from her. We had just the general courses that you take when you're in elementary school, and she was a feared person as far as the teacher was concerned. But she was a very, very nice lady. And then I had Mrs. Vivian David for music, and she also taught history. But her favorite course was music, so she taught music to most of us there. She was the musician. She played the piano, and also she had music classes, so we took music from her. And then the principal of the school was her husband, Elmer David, and we took recreation from him, physical education from him, and also earlier in the years, he was the scoutmaster in Cynthiana, and we all had to become scouts under him. So we didn't have any classes from him because he was the principal, but he taught us a lot of things relative to what good and bad was, the difference between good and bad. And then I guess we had Miss Mary Ann Henderson, who taught me English in the ninth grade, eighth and ninth grade, who is right now still a member of our church right here in the Lexington area. And she was very instrumental in working with us at Banneker School. The other teacher was there. My wife taught school down there during that time and was probably her first year there during that time. And she taught home economics. And then I guess my favorite teacher down there was Jim Way. He was a basketball coach. He taught math. He taught algebra. He also taught industrial arts. And he was my first basketball coach through that era.
Fairly influential on your decision to play and coach?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he was the one that every one of us, all the guys in Cynthiana looked up to because he was a great athlete at, not only at Banneker High School, but he went on to become a great athlete at Central State. Was an outstanding catcher. Was one of the first African Americans to play here in Lexington professional semi-pro ball with the Lexington Hustlers. He was their catcher, a great catcher, and also he was an outstanding basketball player who became my basketball coach.
So he had went to Cynthiana, went to college, and came back. Mm-hmm. Where is Central State?
It's in Wilberforce, Ohio.
Is this what became Wilberforce? Is it called Wilberforce College or University now? Okay. Did they have a football program there, or was the school too small?
at Banneker. They started out years before I enrolled there with a football program, but it didn't last long. I mean, it was a very, very poor school. I mean, we didn't have money to buy equipment, and most of the equipment that we used and that they used in football was handed down from the white school on the hill.
Mm-hmm. What stands out in your mind playing in the Kentucky High School Athletic League?
Well, I guess the camaraderie and the friends we made. We were a Class A school. I guess you would say we were very, very small. We didn't have 50 kids in the school. And we played against schools from Winchester to Paris Western to Madison High, over at Richmond, Madison High. And we played Nicholasville and Carlisle and schools of that nature. But it was just the fact that we were very, very close, and a lot of us were friends and still are friends today. We were under the realization that that's what life was going to be about, and we made the best of it.
What was the furthest your team ever traveled?
Oh, I'd say the furthest we ever traveled out of Cynthiana probably would have been Richmond High or Maysville, probably.
Did most schools, most of the black schools back then, did they have gymnasiums or not?
Yeah, most of them had gymnasiums. We had a real nice gym. It was very small. I mean, you couldn't get any more than 200 people in it, but it was a real nice gymnasium for that. And Maysville had a nice gym. Fee High had a nice gym, and it was located on the Ohio River. And it was a nice place. And most of the gyms, the only one, Georgetown had a nice gym. I guess the well, not Ed Davis, Georgetown. They played at Douglas High. Dunbar had a great gym. We played Dunbar High School in their new gym they built there on Upper Street. They had their facilities.
Mm-hmm.
They had their facilities, yes. They were not as good as the facilities are today, but we had gym. We didn't have, a lot of the gyms didn't have dressing rooms. We had dressing classrooms and things of that nature, but we played, we didn't. We thought that was the best we had.
Mm-hmm. Do you recall any integrated games before you transferred over to Cynthiana? Did your school ever play a white school, even if it was informal?
Not in a regular game. We scrimmaged. We scrimmaged the white teams out of Cynthiana there, but we never played them. Wasn't any reason to play them.
How'd the scrimmages go?
We beat them. Yeah, we beat them. I mean, they didn't have a very good basketball team there until integration came about.
Were the games peaceful and everything?
Oh yeah, because we knew everybody. I mean, we were all friends. We played on Sundays. We played softball and baseball together in Levis's Bottom or over the river, or across the river there, and so we all knew each other. And when it was announced that we were going to be going to integration was coming, then everybody in Cynthiana was kind of pleased because we knew everybody.
Mm.
Plus, it didn't hurt that we were taking some pretty good players up on the hill.
Right.
You know, so.
It seems like in the smaller towns or when athletics came into the picture, it seems like integration went even smoother. And that sounds like that was the case.
In the smaller communities, because there wasn't anything else to do in the smaller communities. I mean, I'm not saying it went perfect for Cynthiana, but we made it as perfect as it could get. Both the black and the white kids that went to school, we made it as good as it could ever be. We didn't have any riots. We didn't have any fights between, you know, whites and blacks over race. And we might have had some fights individually, but not because of race.
Mm-hmm. Who coached the Cynthiana High School team when you played there?
Jimmy Cinnamon coached me my sophomore and junior year, and then after that, Bobby Joe Whitaker coached me my senior year.
It was a pretty fair coaching. Pretty even playing time. Did the black kids coming over get their fair share?
Well, from the time we enrolled up there, we had three blacks starting on the teams every time I was up there. I mean, at every one time we had all five blacks starting at one time. But that wasn't even an issue. You know, we practiced. We were the best. They didn't have anything that could beat us. So we took seven players, went up on the hill from Banneker High School, and all seven of us were on the team.
No problems in terms of, did you ever see any problems or any disputes in terms of traveling with Cynthiana team playing integrated?
Well, yeah, We ran into that problem in Harrisburg. We ran into that problem in Georgetown. We run into that problem. But, you know, once we walked on the floor, I mean, I'm not saying that everything was smooth and cozy, but we had a motive. You know, we ignored a lot of stuff, and you had to, for self reasons, you had to. I mean, we were there for a purpose, and we went to class, we had fun in class, but when we went to play, we had some problems, but that was an intimidation factor. You know, they were attempting to intimidate us and put us in a position where we were thinking more about what they were calling us or what they wanted to call us rather than watching us play basketball. So we preferred to play basketball, and we played it pretty daggone good.
Right.
Played it pretty good.
Okay, so after high school, you went out to Regis in Denver and played under Joe B. Hall. Did you know him personally before?
Yeah, I grew up in Cynthiana. He was from Cynthiana. So I worked for his mom and dad when they had the laundry there. I used to carry clothes back and forth to the laundry and pick up clothing and take it to the laundry for people in Cynthiana I'll never have. So I knew him quite well, yes.
Did you ever consider or have an opportunity to play anywhere else closer to here or any Kentucky?
No, I had 140 letters from colleges and universities across the country. You know, I could have gone, even the Air Force Academy. You know, I could have gone, I could have gotten an appointment for the Air Force Academy. I wasn't too interested in going to that kind of a disciplinary institution at that time, but I had several offers. I mean, you know, I could have gone to Michigan State, University of Cincinnati offered me a scholarship, University of Louisville offered me a scholarship. I could have gone anywhere I wanted to go athletically, but I chose to go to Regis because it was a smaller school and I needed that discipline.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you end up back in Central Kentucky in Lexington, and you're working at Dunbar High School. Can you describe Dunbar's competing against other area schools when you were coaching there?
Well, yeah, I mean, Dunbar was the, along with Louisville Central, was the cream of the crop. Those are the best two schools in the state of Kentucky when it comes to athletics, black or white. And so if you were teaching or coaching at one of those schools, I mean, you were right in the middle, right in the thick of it every year. So when I was offered the job, which really flattered me because I never ever dreamed I'd even be asked to come back to coach at Dunbar High School, not being a graduate from Dunbar High School. Normally those big schools, you know, they lean to someone that has graduated from there, but they call me. So I came back and coached as head coach for two years, won the district 2 years in a row, and went to the regional finals 2 years in a row. We were unfortunate enough, we had one of my players who got hurt in my second year, and we didn't get Lexington Catholic beat us out for the state tournament. But Louisville Central and Dunbar were the cream of the crop.
I guess those were also the two biggest schools in the state.
They were the two biggest black schools.
Yeah, when they were, yeah. When you arrived at Dunbar, were you head coach or did you come on as assistant?
Head coach.
And you replaced Roach?
Yes.
Okay. I was reading an interview that S.T. Roach had given, and he took a similar path as you. It sounds like he had taught at some kind of
he was over at Bate High School. He graduated from Bate High School, and then he went on to Danville and coached for a little bit, and then he went to Kentucky State he was a great player at Kentucky State in football. He played football. He was an outstanding football player. And he was at Harrisburg for a while. Then he came to Dunbar and spent a lot of years, over 30-some-odd years at Dunbar High School, where he won well over 650 basketball games.
Well, you've had some nice words to say about him in your book, and I know he's pretty legendary. But give me a little bit more about him. You know, elaborate on S.T. Roach.
Well, I mean, his name is synonymous with basketball in high school here in Kentucky. He just he's a man that he knew how to coach the game. He knew how to. He was a disciplinarian. He grew up with it in Frankfort. He originally is from Frankfort, but he went to school, and they moved to Danville, where he went to Bate High School, which was an all-black school, and he graduated from there and went on to Kentucky State. But he came over here and built a basketball program, and which wasn't hard to do now, because you know there was two black schools in Lexington, Douglas High, and also Dunbar, and most of the kids went to Dunbar High School, and so he built. He had some great athletes. I mean, great athletes make great coaches. So he, after that, after he retired in '64, He went on to become principal at one of the junior high schools here in Lexington, Lexington Junior. He spent several years there, and then he retired from that. And his name, of course, he served on the University of Kentucky's athletic board for over 26 years. Nobody else, not African American, he's the first to ever serve over there. So, you know, his name is, you know, you talk about the man because he's done a lot of great things, and he's lived a long life. You know, so when you live a long life and you do things good, you know, people, it's not hard to say good things about you.
He's still around today, isn't he?
Yeah.
What was it like to follow him as coach? Did you?
Well, I never thought anything about that because when I first came to town, he was the first person I sat down and talked to. I mean, he became a mentor, and I knew that he knew what he was doing as a coach. I had no experience in coaching. I played, you know, and had a great career in high school and college, but I never knew anything about coaching, so who else would I go to? You know, I went to S.T. Roach, and he became an advisor and a mentor for me, and, you know, and we talked offense and defense at the high school level and which would work and which wouldn't work and what kind of players I had at Dunbar, and, you know, and so this is where I learned a great deal of my basketball at the high school level from him because he was the only one to talk to. You know, why would I have gone to somewhere else? You know, because he's been there over, what, 35 years? You're there that long and you win as much as he's won. He's the first person I need to talk to.
Right.
You know, I need to talk to anybody else. You know?
Were the players and the other faculty pretty welcoming to you following such
really
a legend?
Were. I mean, it wasn't anything. They all knew that Mr. Roach was going to be leaving soon. You know, you just don't stay in a position, you know, like that, you know, the rest of your life. So I guess, and I think he was kind of surprised that they went outside and sought me. And I was in Denver at the time. And Joby Hall called me and asked me if I wanted to be the coach at Lexington Dunbar High School. I said, what idiot wouldn't?
You know, was he already at UK under Rupp by then?
Yes. So I said, yeah, I'm interested. He said, well, the job's yours if you want it. You got to be back here September 1. So my wife and I gave a two-week notice to where I was, which didn't sit very well.
Right.
And came back here, and we got on the road and drove back with my wife and my son. And I was here. I started working in September, and my wife started teaching, and the rest of that is sort of history. So, yeah, I have had a blessed life, and I don't have any complaints. I would like to finish out my coaching career at Dunbar High School, but that wasn't to be. And I left there and went on to Tate Creek High School and became the head basketball coach there, where I spent 4 years and left and, you know, became involved in administration.
What did you teach at Dunbar?
Taught sociology and history. I enjoyed it. And I love to teach sociology and American history.
Good. Well, you were also there when Dunbar closed. Was it still entirely black when you were coaching at Dunbar?
As far as students was concerned, we had, I think, three or four white teachers there. But as far as the students were concerned, it was all black school.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And what was the...
If it had still remained open, I would have never left. I wouldn't have gone to the KHS. I'd have stayed right there.
And why is that?
Because I enjoyed teaching. And I felt like that being an African-American... in that position of being the head basketball coach and a teacher, that I was needed. I think that would have been the place for me to be.
Mm-hmm. Well, when it did close, what was the feeling, either for yourself or the faculty there at Dunbar?
Well, there was some animosity and some bad feelings, but the feelings weren't bad enough to prevent the community to create an uprising over it. You know, I sometimes felt like we should have, because if you look at Louisville Central, it still stands today. And it stood because of the African-American people in Louisville went to war. I mean, they just literally went to educational war and fought for their school, and it's there today, and it won't ever close. It won't ever close. It's a strong school. I mean, it's a... So I think Lexington probably could have saved it, even though it would have needed to be refurbished, you know. And then all of a sudden they build one and call it Dunbar High School. So it just tells me that they could have saved it. You know, when you build a new school out by the airport. And of course, that's the wrong place that it would have been for the inner city, as you would quote unquote call it, inner city. But if they could build a new Dunbar, they could have built an old one right where the new one right where the old one was.
Is it clear that the black community did not want it to close, if you were just to poll the black community at the time?
Yeah. Oh, sure. They didn't want Douglas to close.
Did that close? Which one closed? Did Douglas close first?
Douglas closed first, yeah. Those two schools were very strong competitors. Matter of fact, Coach Livesey was a graduate of Dunbar High School. He played basketball at Dunbar. So he became the coach over at Douglas, and he and Mr. Roach, you know, they dueled every year, battled every year. Douglas didn't have that many students there, but they had good basketball teams. You know, you have to go back. Douglas did better at the national level than Dunbar did, because they finished second in the national tournament for 1 year, and Dunbar never did.
Mm-hmm.
So they had good programs.
So when you went to Tate's Creek, what was that like?
Oh, it was very, very exciting and interesting. I knew most of the coaches out there. You know, I knew Roy Walton, I knew Harry Johnson. You know, I knew the coaches, and of course, I went out there and I knew Dick Jones. Dick Jones and I were friends. You know, and we got to be close friends because I was his assistant until he retired. And he told me when I went out there, he said, "I'm not going to stay here anymore in 2 years." And so he went on, became assistant principal, and he retired from coaching. I got the job, and I stayed there for 4 years.
So that opening had happened coincidentally the same time that Dunbar closed. And mm-hmm. Okay.
Well, I had an option to go to two schools. You know, I could have gone to Bryan Station, or I could have gone to Tate's Creek. So I chose Tate's Creek because it was a pretty tough time around here for black and white during that time. You know, blacks did not want to go all the way out there, and weren't any black teachers out there but one, and that was Miss Lillian Delaney. She was the only African American teacher there. And then shortly after that, Mr. Wilmer West, who became my assistant coach, came out. So there were three of us on campus at that time. And so we needed to be out there. We needed to be there.
And there was did the bulk of the black student population from Dunbar, did the bulk of them go to Bryan Station or Tate's Creek?
They went to Henry Clay and Lafayette and Tate's Creek. Some went to Tate's Creek, but all the good athletes did not go.
Where'd they end up?
They ended up Henry Clay and Lafayette and Bryan Station.
You missed opportunity for you,
yeah,
it sounds like.
Yeah, but I had some good kids out there. I had some good programs. You know, we won quite a bit.
Okay, well, let's turn to the Kentucky High School Athletic Association, and I'm going to turn this tape over. Okay, after you coached at Tate's Creek, you ended up working for the Kentucky High School Athletic Association, and I wanted to, first of all, talk about the dispute that happened in about 1970-71, the lawsuit that came about. Let's first talk about your experience as a coach while the KHSAA was operating in the late 60s. Define the organization. What was the officiating like? I've heard some accusations that the officiating was not sometimes fair to the predominantly black teams. What's your take on that?
Well, you know, the thing about that is that all the schools hired their own officials during that time. So not many of the black officials got hired, you know, by the white schools. Now, you know, the black schools, Louisville Central was still there, Hopkinsville was still working, was still open. And then you had Madisonville was open up until 64. Those schools were open. They were hiring basically the black officials and some white officials come in work. But I concentrated when I was at Dunbar High School. I hired black officials and white officials, but most of them were black because I knew they weren't getting the job and weren't getting work at the white schools. So consequently, the only place they were going to be able to work would be at Dunbar, Douglas, Paris, Western schools that stayed open up until 61, 62. So yeah, we worked, and we had, and even after that, even after the the merger. And even after the KHSA, the black schools went into it, the KHSA is the one that still were open, like Central and Dunbar and Ashland Blazer and Bowling Green High Street and up at Covington Grant. When black officials were, white officials were hired, yeah, there was some problems.
What was the, were the problems just simply employment, just getting the gig?
Well, the problem wasn't so much getting the gig, you know, because, you know, there weren't so many black officials at that time, so the schools had to hire white officials. Now, if they were playing black schools, it wasn't an issue. But if the black school was playing a white school, then there was an issue. And that is one of the major reasons why the KHSAA, in essence, was ordered that this is what you're going to do. You're going to have a program to recruit and train both black and white officials, and you're going to be the one responsible for the games being assigned. And that's what happened.
I've read some accounts where in Western High School in Owensboro and some others where there was some, you know, almost fights that would result after poor officiating. Do you recall any of that? Or
not where I was teaching or coaching.
Did you hear about that?
Happen. Oh, yeah. I heard about a lot of that. You know, we didn't have it here in Lexington. When I was even at Dunbar, we didn't have it because... And we played white schools. We played schools out of the mountains. But normally what I would try to do is to bring a black and white official in when that happened. You know, Scoop Brown worked for me a lot. You know, of course, he's gone now. But I had Willie Williams that worked a lot. But I try to bring in a black official and a white official. And not to balance it out, but just to let the white schools know that, you know, here we are. We're not going to bring two black officials in here and then you get beat and you think you got home.
Mm-hmm.
So, but it didn't work all that way when we went on the road. You know, we didn't have, Dunbar didn't run into many black officials on the road when we played the white schools. You know, we had to be good, we were good, and our teams were good. So we, you know, my philosophy was let's jump out early and make them be the one worried about catching up. They can catch up fine. If they can't, then they're going to get beat.
Did you find any particular region of the state or any particular schools that were more welcoming during that integration, you know, the first years of integration?
Well, you know, I think Louisville was. We played St. Xavier. They were very, very, of course, St. Xavier down in Louisville. Now, well, they played black schools anyway. You know, when integration came about, they played schools because they were right there close. And why go outside and play when you got the best play right there in the community? But Harrisburg was a tough place to play. It was tough. Georgetown was a tough place to play. You know, it was just tough because those people in those areas felt like that, you know, integration was not what should be. You know,
they weren't ready for it yet.
They weren't ready for it.
And it was tough by the cat calls you're getting, or just you could feel the pressure.
Oh, yeah.
You sense it when you go in there.
You feel the tension, you know.
Yeah.
So it was that kind of a situation. But we outgrew that.
Mm-hmm.
We outgrew that.
Okay, so when this lawsuit came in, you feel like the organization kind of needed a correction.
I mean, this should never have had to happen. I mean, the court decision, federal court decision of 1971, should never have had to happen. A state association, once the Brown versus Board of Education decision came down and was passed and integration segregation was over, the KHSAA should have said, okay, you can become members of this organization. Here's what we need to do. Eventually, we need to bring in an assistant commissioner, African-American, female, or whatever, and add that element to the board. Well, they weren't going to do that. Ted Sanford didn't feel like that's what he needed to do. He was the master of the Kentucky High School Athletic Association, never had worked with African-American people before, so why do you think he should have to bend to do that? But it took Judge Max Swinford, the federal judge at that time, to make him understand that the law was going to intervene, and he didn't like it.
Sanford didn't.
Oh,
like
no, he didn't like that. You know, he didn't like having being forced to hire an African American assistant commissioner. You know, he didn't like to be forced to have an African American have to be serving on the board. He didn't like that at all. And then, of course, you know, the state passed a regulation as far as employment that if you're under the state regulation that if you're 70, you can't work beyond that. So he was kind of forced out by it because of age.
And what roughly when did that happen?
Lord, 74, 75.
So soon after you got there, within a few years?
About 4 years after I got there, yeah. And I will say this about the man. The man was brilliant. He probably was as closest to a genius I've ever met when it comes to academics. And he was excellent with English, great mathematician. He knew how to deal, but he just was not up on the times. He would never exist today. Couldn't exist today.
Mm-hmm.
Not with that thinking he had.
Where was he from originally?
Henderson.
Okay.
He just could not. I mean, he and I got to be relatively close. You know, he'd have me come to speak at his church, youth church programs, and after he got to know me, you know, it was okay, but he wasn't in favor of that. He was not in favor of having being forced to have to do something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's and as I always told him, you know, it should never have had to go to court. I mean, you should have had to understand that eventually this was going to have to happen. But he never would believe that. You know, he felt like that. He was the commissioner and that he ran the association, and he did. He was one of the originators of the association. So he felt like that his call would be the call, you know. But Judge Max Swinford laid it down pretty heavy.
Robert Settler was the attorney, and he worked for the Kentucky Civil Liberties Union. He filed the suit, made the argument. But who was really behind it? I mean, was there a group?
Black Coaches Association here in Kentucky. All of the black coaches, Leonard Hunt, was one of the leaders in that, because he's gone now. And then you had the basketball coach at Louisville Central at the time, was Bob Graves. He was involved in that at the time. So there were several black officials and coaches across the state who pressed that issue.
And they were pressing it for the things we've discussed. There was not enough numbers, and there was
numbers
not a fair officiating, still as late as 1970.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So you said to me earlier that you testified, or you were subpoenaed?
Yeah, I was subpoenaed to testify relative to the Kentucky High School Athletic Association and African American or people of color.
What do you remember of the trial and what you
really? I mean, you know, you both sides was there. I mean, it wasn't where you had a lot of witnesses on the side of the KHSAA. It was Mr. Sanford and his attorneys, and on the other side it was the Black Coaches Association and their attorney. And I was called by the KHSAA. I wasn't called by the Black Coaches Association. Of course, they knew my position and they knew my stance. You know, I had the same feeling that they should be where they are. You know, if the KHSAA was not going to do this on their own, then somebody had to call that. And no better people in the state were the older people. I was a youngster at the time. You know, I'm 26, 27.
Mm-hmm.
It should have been Leonard Hunt and that bunch to call it, because there was more credibility behind them calling it than here a little old whippersnapper coming up at 27 years of age and with 2 years of coaching under his belt or so, thinking that he should get up. But they called, and you know, they were asking questions relative to my feelings about the KHSAA, if it was discriminating, and my answers were, yeah, it's discrimination. If it's discrimination with the schools, why wouldn't it be discrimination with the association?
Mm-hmm.
So that was, I think I stayed on the stand 3 or 4 minutes. That was it.
Well, I guess the trial was pretty quick, probably one day kind of thing, maybe?
A couple days. They couldn't get affidavits and papers signed from the commissioner. He wasn't going to turn anything over to the court until he got
Sanford,
yeah,
same guy,
until he got talked to real good by the judge, you know.
Let's talk about Max Swinford. He's from Cynthiana.
Yeah,
he's got a strong record on civil rights.
Oh yes.
Did you know him or know of him?
I worked for him.
Okay. How describe the man for me.
You
cut his yard, huh?
Yeah, hard.
Tell me.
Tough man. His office was here in Lexington, you know, during my time here teaching and coaching over the old post office downtown, where his office was. And I used to go by and talk with him and have lunch with him. And, I mean, I learned a lot from him. Yeah, he just says, you know, you the decisions he had to make was not very popular with most white people in Kentucky, but he wasn't looking for popularity. He was looking for what was right. If the federal government felt like that the Brown versus the Board of Education decision was right, then why wouldn't the state organizations in charge of high school sports not follow the same suit? I mean, it would make it kind of stupid to have black and white kids going to school together and an all-white organization running athletics. That makes no sense. So, I mean, yeah, he was firm. I mean, he was strong. And growing up, I learned a lot from him. I used to cut his yard, and he used to tell me, about the push mower I had was the only way to cut grass. You know, I always felt like that wasn't it, because I had that little rotating thing. You know, his yard wasn't real big, but, you know, he had a philosophy about everything, and I admired him, and still do today. I mean, he's just, we got to be pretty good friends. He would call me, even when I was assistant commissioner, so let's have lunch. Let's talk about your experiences. Is anything going on I can help you with? I said, no, I'm doing fine. You know, he said, well, I just want to know, you know, because I'm going to be stepping down, you know, and once I step down, that's it. So, I mean, this man was 75 years old then.
So he followed, he's the kind of judge that once he made a decision, he wanted to see it through, yeah, kind of, yeah, thing.
Well, especially with me, because he knew me. I grew up down in Cynthiana, and he followed my life. You know, I didn't know much about Judge Max Swinford, other than the fact that he was a judge. We all called him judge down there, you know. And I'd work for him. He'd give all of us odd and end jobs to do, you know, to keep us out of mischief.
Mm-hmm.
But his son and I, we talk, you know, we talk today. I go to Cynthiana, I talk to his son.
Is his Chris Swinford? Is that his son?
No.
John Swinford. John Swinford, okay. All right, so when you came over to the KHSAA, what was that like?
It was a different experience. I had a good friend there who was an official, Billy Wise, who was the one that approached me about the job. You know, they came to Tate's Creek High School, and I was teaching sociology. He came into my class, and after class was over, he said, we are interested in talking to you about becoming assistant commissioner for the KHSAA. You know, and I at the time, I wasn't really interested in it, but at the time, I didn't know anybody else in the Commonwealth of Kentucky that would be the right person for the job. You know, and I'm not saying that in a derogatory to anybody else, black or white. I'm just saying that at that time, I felt like that if it was going to be done, I was the right person to do it. And so I looked at it. Am I going to stay in high school coaching the rest of my life, or am I going to be in college coaching? I said, well, I'll give this a try. So I accepted the position, mm-hmm, and stayed there for 33 years.
How were those first couple of years after the suit resulting from a court order, and guy wasn't real was he welcoming to you?
Yes, it was. I mean, because I knew a lot of people, you know, around the state, and a lot of people knew me, you know. I mean, I was all stater 3 years in a row here, you know, so people that were older than I knew my name, you know. And so when I went out to recruit officials or went out to do clinics and baseball, and I did all the clinics in baseball. I did all the clinics in cross country. I did all the clinics in wrestling. You know, so I made myself very well known around the state, and this was accepted. So I had no problems with the KHSA, none whatsoever.
Did the did changes take place over the first few years, or after?
Oh yeah, we originated the Officials Association. Made sure the associations hired assigning secretaries, and we sat down and met with the assigning secretaries, let them understand what the regulations are going to be, that African American people of color would be welcome into the associations, and they would be hired relative to their positions, and also relative to whether they could or whether they couldn't work. You know, that they would be treated that way. They would hold clinics and teach, and if they didn't, they wouldn't be holding the position. So what you see today is the outcome of the officials associations of 1970-71.
All right, let's turn to your book. You've spent quite a bit of time putting together this book, Shadows of the Past. It's about the Kentucky High School Athletic League, which was essentially the African-American high school sports league before integration. What caused you to want to undertake this project?
It needed to be done. There's no history out there on this. Now, a lot of the schools have done books on their school, but nothing is in any public library in this state or anywhere else relative to the African-American high schools in Kentucky and their athletic program that were members of the Kentucky High School Athletic League. There were more schools than that in Kentucky. Matter of fact, there were close to 80 black schools in Kentucky, but not all of them played athletics. And the reason why they didn't, because they could afford to play athletics. And where they were located, some of them were in basements of churches. Some of them were in basements of homes. Some of them were in basements of hospitals. They just could not do it. But they used these schools to keep youngsters from having to travel so far to go get an education. But the 55 schools that were members of the league from 1932 to 1957, I have information on all of them but one.
What's the one?
Whitesburg, Dunbar, Palmer Dunbar out of Whitesburg. Okay. I couldn't find a thing on it.
You just know that they were in, the only reason you know of them is because they were in the organization.
No, I knew they were there, and I talked to people in Whitesburg, white people in Whitesburg that knew about the school, but I didn't find anybody that had any information on it.
Is the building gone, I guess?
As far as I know.
Yeah.
So I set out to do this book, and I started in Cynthiana, because if I could do it in Cynthiana where I grew up, well, maybe I can do this statewide. So it took me 8 years to cross the state and find that information. I did it, and the book came out in March, and it wasn't easy getting it, but we got it.
Yeah, it sounded like it was quite challenging. What did you find most challenging about the process?
People wanting to give up the information. You know, the questions was, why is everybody interested in what we did when we were growing up? Nobody ever was interested in why we were growing up, which was a pretty good comment, you know. And the local libraries, which shouldn't have had any animosity toward whether you're black or white, the libraries are there for historical purposes, but they didn't charter anything relative to black schools and their athletic programs.
When you'd call up the libraries, they didn't. Yours was one of the first.
They had that school was here, but we don't have any information on it.
Right.
Well, athletics? Oh no, we don't have anything on athletics. We can tell you who the principal was, probably. We can tell you where the school was located, probably. We may have a picture of the school, but no history.
Had you done much historical research? You were a history teacher.
I taught history, yes.
Did you do much of this kind of research before you set out for this?
No.
Did you learn some lessons on this?
Oh, yes. I learned. Jim Holst told me, Lewis, you're not a very good writer, but you're a damn good researcher. Because I knew where to go. You know, I knew where to go find the material. You know, and if I didn't know, I got on the phone and called some people in the areas where I want to go. Look, this is what I'm looking for. Who can I talk to? You know, they can tell, well, here's so-and-so probably got the information. I'd call them. Well, yeah, I did have it, but so-and-so's got it. I said, you know, they give me the names. All the names in the back of that book are the people that gave me information.
Mm-hmm. Right.
One of them. That's a lot of them are gone. A lot of those folks are gone.
Just since you met them.
Absolutely. So, they were very, very kind, and the book turned out to be pretty good, I think.
Yes, I do too.
Turned out to be pretty good. So I'm thrilled with that. And my only dismay right now, and of course the book's only been out since March, and the book is selling well, but we only have it in one bookstore, and that's in Joseph Beth. And the reason I won't put it in the other bookstore, because they want 50% of everything of the book, you know. And
really?
I'm not going to do that. You know, I'll sell it out of my car, and I'll sell it at the reunions, and people order it. I mean, it's being ordered through Host Communications. Mm-hmm. So I only did 3,000 copies, so they'll be gone before the summer's over. You know, and whether I do any more or not, that'd be up to the people who feel like we should. But I think the book ought to be in the library. In the school, in the middle school and the high school libraries, and to this point they're only in two.
Are the school, I'm not exactly sure how that works, does the publisher try to sell that to the schools across the state, or do the schools have to ask for it?
Well, we're trying to sell it to them, to the systems.
Yeah.
You know, and we're offering them a pretty good discount, so we've got information going out to them before the school starts this year. And Scott County System bought it. Louisville Central has brought it for their library, but it needs to be in all the Louisville libraries. You know, because there were two schools in Louisville at the time that that were pretty strong. And you know, the ironic thing about it, of course, Louisville Central was the granddaddy of all of them, but there was a school in Louisville known as Catholic High. Black students enrolled at that school, but had all white teachers.
Is that right?
Yeah.
And that was a different...
They were just all Catholic priests and nuns that taught school, which the kids respected that. But when you stop and think about that, that's kind of ridiculous. You know, you have separate schools, and you have one school where all the kids are black and all the teachers are white.
And it works.
And it worked. You know what I mean? That in itself should have been an example.
That should have proven it instead of taking it to the Supreme Court.
Absolutely.
Now, in doing the book, what was your most fascinating discovery?
The number of schools that existed. You know, being it's from Cynthiana, we never traveled anywhere. I knew all the schools here in the central area. I thought that's all it was. I never knew there were these schools in Harlem and Lynch and Kaywood and Evers and up there in Pikeville. And, Whitesburg, I didn't know that. We never played those schools. And, from Danville on, I knew about all the athletes. From Winchester, I knew about all the athletes. And in Covington, I knew about Grant. In Lexington, I knew about Dunbar and Douglas. In Georgetown, I knew about Ed Davis. And, Paris, I knew about Paris Western. Paris Western probably had the best group of basketball players that I've ever seen in my lifetime in high school. People talk about Ashland, Paul Blazer. None of those teams could touch that team of 52-53. They were just a great basketball team.
Booker T and Ashland or Blazer?
No, Paul Blazer.
Okay.
They were just a great basketball team. Went on to win the Nationals, so I tell you something.
Yeah. Now, obviously you've praised Central High School and Dunbar as being two of the greatest, but if you throw in the variable of enrollment, because as you know as a coach, when you've got 1,000 I looked at Central's enrollment. It was something like 1,500 in 1954. I mean, when you've got that many kids to choose from, you're going to have a pretty good team. So if you kind of qualify it, what would you say is the best, what school had the best program, you know, factoring that in there?
In basketball, factoring that, Paris Western would have to be there. Danville Bate would have to be in there. Maysville Fee High would have to be in there. But the best of all of them, far as football is concerned, would be Owensboro Western. They dominated football. I mean, they dominated football in the Western sector.
Mm-hmm.
See, West was split up into two sections: East 41, West 41.
Is that because of the highway?
They dominated down there. Nobody beat them in football for years. I mean, he never had a losing season. Never had a losing season in football.
Now, Goodloe was the principal.
Goodloe was the principal. He was at Owensboro for a while. He spread around. Goodloe was Ashland. He was there. He was at several schools.
Okay.
Matter of fact, a lot of the principals were at several schools. But
who was the coach at Owensboro? Do you recall that offhand?
Oh, Joe. I cannot think of Joe's name.
I'll check it out in the book. Yeah. Right.
I ought to know it backwards because he was an All-American high school player, and also, as well as an All-American at Kentucky State. One of the best players. He was the only player in Owensboro to ever play in an All-Star football game as a high school player against the Chicago Bears. At the time, so pretty good player.
Were there any, when you were doing your research, were there any Kentucky High School Athletic League icons that were still around that you were able to interview? And who stands out there?
William Bunny Davis from over at Danville Bate, who probably during his time was the best athlete in the state of Kentucky. He ran 109.6 when nobody was keeping records of those kind of things.
Was he an athlete or coach?
Athlete.
And he's
great athlete, great baseball player, outstanding track and field, basketball player, played it all.
Oh
Lord, Bunny had to be in there long before in the 30s.
And he's still here. He's still here.
No, he's gone.
Oh, since gone. But when you started the project, you were able to meet him.
When I started the project, but he's long since gone. And then, of course, ST Roach is still here, and I had famed coach from down at Bowling Green was here, and I can't think of his name right now,
but it's Moxley.
Moxley was there. Matter of fact, I got all the material on Bowling Green High Street by sitting in his living room and talking to him. And he gave me his stuff. I still got it in the box. He said, "I don't need it. You keep it." And on all the material there with his team. So, these people were alive and well, you know, and they were thrilled that I was doing the book. You know, they didn't think I'd ever finish it because they didn't think I'd find enough of the material. You know, and that's the dismay I have relative to that book, is that a lot of the people that were here when I started that idea. That idea has been on my mind for 20 years, man. But you know, when I was assistant commissioner, I just never had the time to do it, you know. But and then I wasn't really recognized and known until I became commissioner, and then my name was out there, you know. Right. So I had 8 years at that, and got around. People knew my name. They trusted me. Let me in. We talked, and they gave up the information. They wouldn't let me bring it home. I had to go make copies of it and pictures and re-photograph the pictures and stuff like that. But that's stuff that they cherish. I mean, they cherish that stuff in that book right there. The pictures have never been published before. Never. You don't find those pictures in libraries. You don't find them. They're in people's basements and in their boxes. And people say, well, you go back in the box and maybe somewhere on the other, my grandson will be able to understand that his dad or his uncle played sports. And you know. You know, the realization and the rationalization of all of this is that high school sports for black schools didn't start out of something that they wanted to do to maintain a school. They started high school sports for African American kids and black kids in that era to keep them in schools, keep them from dropping out. That was the whole purpose. It wasn't just to have just, well, let's just play athletics. And most of the coaches that coach didn't get paid for doing it.
Mm-hmm.
In the big schools, at Dunbar, and the big school, Madisonville, Hopkinsville, Louisville Central, these coaches got paid, but small schools didn't get paid. Man.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they did it out of the love of the of what they wanted, with what they did, and then for the fact that the hope is that they'd be able to keep the girls and the boys in school from dropping out at age 16.
Right.
So that's what it was all about.
Well, I'm done with my questions. Did you want to tell me anything else?
Well, ain't much else I can tell you other than the fact that the you know, my life has been blessed, and I think that the work I did on that book wasn't done only by me. You know, I put it together, but it was done with 144 other people across the Commonwealth of Kentucky and people that live outside of Kentucky to get me the information. So they deserve an awful lot of credit for the history that's there as well.
Okay, well, thanks a lot, Mr. Stout.
Mm-hmm.